Welcome to the Calvary Leadership Podcast, where we equip leaders within Calvary Church with the tools to lead well and continue growing in their calling. Whether you're leading in ministry in the workplace or at home, this podcast is designed to encourage, challenge, and strengthen you as a leader. In each episode, we'll dive into practical leadership insights, biblical wisdom, and real conversations to help you lead with excellence. Let's get started. Welcome to this month's Calvary Leadership Podcast. We are blessed to have with us the one and only Pastor Alan Hanna from Allegheny Center Alliance Church, the father of Cal U's rising basketball star. And we are so fortunate to have with us. Of course, Pastor Alan preaches each year at Calvary. He's also part of our pastoral advisory team, but more than that, he's a good friend and a very good leader. And so today we are talking about how do you speak the truth to those you lead with kindness. And that at face value can sound like a really passive way to lead, right? Where we want to be kind to everyone, but we're not going to offend anyone, or almost like a people pleaser. But that's not what we're talking about. So kind of kick off here, Alan, how do you define the balance between truth and kindness in leadership?
That's a really great question. I mean, both are significantly important. And I mean, you understand that. I mean, Jesus, you preach this and I preach this, grace and truth. He talked about it a lot. I always find it interesting that whenever Jesus mentions grace and truth, he always mentions the word grace first. And I think our human nature, even as pastors and leaders, is to lead with the truth part first, then try to bring in the grace. And when we get that out of order, things go sideways and south. So like for me, and again, it's great being with you today, and just have a lot of respect for you and Calvary. And I was thinking when you were introducing this topic, like, so who's the expert coming in? Cause I really would love to learn.
Hey, I have watched you walk through this with a number of different situations, and you do it really well. And you've done it on multiple sides, both from the I'm leading side and the I'm receiving side. Yeah. And so you might not consider yourself an expert, but I can say from firsthand experience, you've been a good example and model for me that I've watched you live this out.
Well, thank you. And I mean, to that regard too, Nick, you've been a great friend, and yeah, you've known my story and have seen some of the painful seasons and the joyful seasons, and you've been there for all of that. So really grateful. You know, for me, everybody's leadership style is different. So I'm just going to speak from my perspective. I'm a relational leader, and I try to lead very relational. And what I mean by that, it's not that I attempt to be best friends with everybody. You know, their work dynamics, we have a pretty large staff here. And while I consider all of our staff friends, I can't hang out with everyone and don't hang out with everyone. And I'm not best friends with everyone. There's those dynamics. But when I say I'm a relational leader and I lead first that way, I want our staff to know that I love them, I value them, and that relationship is of utmost importance to me. Not just what they do, not just their job description, not what they just do for me or the church, but I genuinely love and care for them. And so whether it's staff meetings, our staff chapel like we had today, where we talk relationally, or a one-on-one meeting, I want them to know that I genuinely value them. And I need to know that from them, because when it comes to, like we're going to talk about, having difficult conversations, whether it's holding someone accountable, or if someone makes a mistake or they drop the ball, I want to be able to speak truth and say, hey, you missed the mark here, or this isn't what we talked about, or I need to make a change. And we have enough relational equity built up that they know it's coming from a place. It may sting. They may not agree. But we have enough relational equity built up that I can say that. And they trust me in that. And again, it doesn't mean it always goes perfect. Doesn't mean I've always got it right. I'm not a fan of like the compliment sandwich. In fact, you may be familiar. There was an article not too long ago. I think it's Adam Grant that's talks about stop doing the compliment sandwich, where, you know, you give the proverbial, hey, you're doing such a great job at this. And then I'm going to come back in and really try to give you a constructive criticism and then follow that up with another compliment.
Everyone forgets what's in the middle.
Everybody forgets what's in the middle. And they see it as an obligatory compliment at the front and the back. Yeah. And so the relational part with me, and again, I'm not saying it works all of the time. I'm not saying that, you know, people walk away and it's just there's no
mess. Like a million bucks.
Yeah. I just would rather, and part of this is how I want to be led, or be in relationship with someone. Like, you know, if you and I had a disagreement or relational, there was a breakdown, I don't want you having to feel like you have to spend 10 minutes going, Alan, you know, I really love you, right? Like, I'm really for you. You're an amazing pastor. Just our friendship. It's like, I want you to say, hey, Alan, you know, I love you. You hurt me.
Yeah.
And I just want to cut to that. So that's how I try to
Westmoreland Night of Worship back in 2019, just since we're clearing the air, you know, you hurt me that I couldn't be on a microphone singing. And I was really
now the truth comes out.
Just kidding. That would have been a disaster.
The next one will let you sing a solo.
Thank you. Maybe I'll sing like Friends Are Friends Forever or one of my favorites. On that, I didn't send this question to you, but just on that note, you want grace and truth. You know, you want to be kind. You also want to be truthful. If you're going to lean one way or the other, which do you think is more beneficial?
If I have done my job establishing love and trust and relationship, truth.
Yeah. I naturally would lean the other way, but I have learned over 20 years now of being in ministry and, you know, lifetime leadership that even when you don't have the relational equity, withdrawing on that and being truthful is more of a service to that person, even if they don't realize it and receive it, than glossing over the truth and just being kind. Because then you punt the ball down the field, and what they actually need to hear to get better, whether they want to hear it or not, they don't hear it, and therefore they continue to perpetuate this detached reality that they're really good at something, or that one thing in their life or what they do isn't bad. And it's the whole clarity is kindness. It actually hurts them. They might not see that. They might see the truth hurting them. You don't have to be mean. Like, it's not like you're yelling at them, but truth does hurt at times. You know, I don't always like to hear the truth, but I need it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, truth doesn't mean being a jerk.
No.
but just, I like your word, clarity is, or your phrase, clarity is kindness. And especially when you're dealing with staff, you know, if you're having a 45-minute conversation, you're not walking away remembering even 30 minutes or 15 minutes. And so oftentimes I will, before a difficult meeting, just write down, you know, okay, what are the one or two things that I really want that staff person to leave with, and then just have that in front of me.
I would agree. I found that's helpful because it holds me accountable
right
to what I want to say going in, because I will be less likely to say it if I don't have it in front of me. I'll be like, oh, you know, I kind of hinted at it, but I didn't say it. But if it's sitting right in front of me,
Yeah.
it's like staring you in the face and you can't help but say it.
And even summarizing, at the end, just, before you pray with a person, to end the time together, which I think is really good and important. Just saying, hey, here's our next step. Just so we're on the same page. I want to make sure you heard what I'm saying and that I heard what you're saying. It seems rudimentary too, but I find myself using those words a lot. Like, I'll let that person express their feelings, even if it moves into venting a bit. But to say the words, what I hear you saying is this. And then asking those clarifying questions for them so that we leave that meeting all on the same page with as much emotion eliminated as
Oh, yeah.
possible.
Yeah. It's hard. Now, a lot of these ideas, these concepts could be seen as almost just leadership business practices, but they're not. They're biblical practice. Can you think of biblical example of this approach of speaking the truth but with love?
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorites is Moses and his father-in-law Jethro.
Yeah. Such a
I'm
good one.
sure, yeah, I'm sure many of your listeners know that. Exodus 16 or Exodus 18, Moses has all this responsibility. He's led God's people out. His father-in-law comes into town, and it's interesting. Like, just hammering down on the relational piece. I mean, certainly it was his father-in-law, but they spend a day together first before they ever get into any of the business side of it. They catch up on family, they worship together. And then the Bible says the next day, Jethro watches, like, he just sits back and watches Moses, his son-in-law, leadership. And then what he witnesses is that Moses is making all of these decisions and everything is falling on his shoulders. It's adding stress to him and it's adding stress to God's people because everything is filtered. All the leadership is filtering through him. So famously, Jethro says, man, you got to stop this. And so what I love about it is Jethro recognizes the leadership capacity of Moses and his son-in-law and calls it out. And so, yeah, to me, the relational pieces there, I have had people in my life, and I know you have as well, and you lead this way, where you invite them in. Obviously, Moses invited his father-in-law in to say, hey, watch this process. So there are people that I've invited in and do currently now that see me in action, people that when I have difficult conversations or decisions in our church or organizationally, I'll call and say, hey, you and I have had those conversations, even in the last year. And so having other people see that and then just speak into that. So, yeah, scripturally, I think that's a great example of
So
it.
important. Yeah, that's really good. How do you handle difficult conversations with people who don't want to hear the truth? They want to live in their perception that things are awesome and they're awesome. Whatever you want to put in there, but how do you handle those conversations with people who don't want to hear it?
That's really
It's hard. I mean,
it's
it's
really
complicated.
hard. Yeah, and I don't want to, hyper spiritualize it, but it goes without saying, but I will say it. I always pray first, like just in all seriousness, Lord, I'm heading in to a meeting today that's really difficult. God, you know my heart. I got to have a conversation. This could go sideways. It's not, I don't believe that's your desire, Lord, for it to go sideways. It's hurting, especially in the church circle. And so just praying for that person, praying, James' commandment to us about being slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to anger. I'll pray that. And so I think prayer is really good. And then even going into that meeting and opening with prayer just sets the tone. But then there comes a point where you do need to deliver truth and understand that it's you need to do it in a kind way as well. I try to get past the emotion and
practically, how do you do that practically? How do you, because the emotion in those conversations, those moments, whether you're talking to a staff member or a volunteer, and you know, hey, you got to have a conversation, you got to have some, tell them something that they don't want to hear, and you know the emotion is going to be like right at the surface. How do you overcome that?
One, I even before the meeting, I try to get down to what's the root of the pain?
Yeah.
Like getting really practical. Is it okay? Are they just struggling with change? Are there things in their life, like external circumstances that are happening that are adding more stress, where this is just another change in their life, maybe, and it's overflowing? Are there pressures that I am not aware of? So sometimes just asking questions, like being really patient and just asking clarifying questions and saying, okay, help explain that more to me. Like what is this, what's the root of this? And, so digging, you know, digging deeper in that. I've often found too, not only do I write down points, but sometimes just even summarizing, like if I have to have a really difficult conversation or like say I'm letting somebody go, I will write that down, my thoughts down, what we're going to discuss, and actually hand it to them so that when they leave, again, because in the midst of the moment, things are forgotten or there's emotion attached. And so they'll leave with, like, hey, this is a summary of what we discussed. So even we can go back to that later, or they can see it later. It's really hard. And again, I don't think any of us bat 1,000, but little things like that really help.
That's smart. That's really smart. How do you ensure that correction or rebuke comes across as loving rather than harsh?
As you said earlier, sometimes the person who's receiving that can't make the differential. I mean,
are we 100% responsible for that?
No, I don't know.
I feel like as a leader, we take on 100% of that responsibility oftentimes, that we are in complete control of how they process, receive information and feel when they walk out of that conversation. Whether it's, hey, you know, next time you do that kid's lesson, maybe plan a little bit ahead of time. Don't just shoot from the hip. Or, hey, you know, next time you can't make it, let us know in planning center. Don't just ghost us, you know, or something more significant than that. But is that totally our responsibility as the leader, as the one bringing the truth and the kindness? Do we hold the keys to their emotional health?
No, I think we're responsible for how we deliver that. We're not responsible for the results. You know, one of the things that's really unique in our position as pastors in the church, and I heard this question asked just in the last 48 hours, you know, are we a family or are we a business? And there's a real tension. You know, sometimes people will think because it's a church, you know, we're family, we're anti-corporate, anti-business. And I will be the first one to admit, I hope the Church of Jesus Christ operates differently than the business world and the corporate world. Absolutely. But my pushback on the question of are we a family or are we a business is, can't we be both? Because, you know, in all of our churches, for you and I as pastors, we have a board that we are responsible to. There are salaries, there are budgets that are involved. When we're talking about stewardship, good and biblical stewardship, there is a business aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And so I reject the notion that churches shouldn't be businesslike in some regards. And that includes holding people accountable.
Yeah.
You know, no congregant who works and has a job, you know, box it. When they go to work, they have job descriptions and they're held accountable and they lead people who are held accountable. Well, it's a stewardship issue in the church as well. Now, again, that doesn't mean that when we're addressing and having difficult conversations, the spirit, the attitude, the conversation shouldn't look different. But to your point, we're not responsible. No, we're not responsible for that. One practical thing I have found that has been helpful too is that if I'm having that conversation, to make sure, especially if it's a staff person, is to make sure that there's somebody in their life that they can vent to, that they can have really honest conversation with, like you and I.
Yeah.
I'm sure like you and I are this for each other.
For sure.
We go through tough things. We can have lunch or I can pick up a phone call and I can be 100% vulnerable, unfiltered Alan with you.
Yep.
And you know where that's coming from. Well, the people that we lead need to have that as well. And I have to be secure enough as a leader to know, like if I have an elder or another staff person walk alongside that staff person and they go, Pastor Alan did this. He's such a jerk. I can't believe, well, I can't, you know, get defensive about that. If they're sharing that in a safe space, that's helpful to them. So I think also just providing those safe spaces for your staff and others where they can voice those things is a helpful part of that process.
And encouraging them with the idea that that's healthy, normal, beneficial. That's not frowned upon. Like we're not all here just like shove the feelings you have down,
right?
Ignore them and push through. It's deal with them in a proper way.
Yeah.
In a proper space, in a safe space. And
that's
part of being a human being.
I'll give you an example. I had a staff person, and if she happens to hear this, she'll know who it is. And but it was great, and she wouldn't mind. We were having a difficult conversation, and I know she completely disagreed with me on a direction that we were going, but I could tell she was holding back. And I said to her, I said, "What are you thinking that you're not telling me?" And she instantly froze, you know, because she's afraid that. And I said the person's name and I said, "Look, we have to have enough trust and love and honesty with one another that we can be vulnerable and you can really tell me what you're thinking." And I told her, I said, "If you think I'm a jerk, tell me I'm a jerk. You think I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. Like, it's okay." And so when she finally realized, you know, it just all came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Thank you.
There you go.
Like, thanks. Like, okay, now we can talk about it." And so I think as a leader, just setting the environment and letting the person know that they can be honest with you and I'm not going to be defensive. I'm not going to come down. It may not change the decision.
Yeah.
It may not change the outcome, but you can have that level of honesty.
How did you learn that? Like, do you find yourself usually being more on the kind of blunt side or the more passive side?
Probably the more blunt side.
So how did you learn to soften? Was it just like, you know, trial and error, enough times you took people off and then, you know, you're like, that's not working.
Hey, I have worked for, I was going to say pastors, but I've been in the corporate world too. I have had bosses that at the same time, they have been some of the most supportive, wonderful, life-giving bosses, and at the same time have caused incredible amounts of pain in my life.
Yeah.
And so I think all of us learn like from mistakes of our bosses. And I was actually having this conversation with our staff today. They kind of honored me for 5 years.
Big deal.
Of being here. And they were saying a lot of nice things. And I said to them, a lot of them are young. And I said, one day you're going to sit in my chair. And I was thanking them because I've only been a lead pastor for 5 years. And I was thanking them because not only am I new here to ACAC for 5 years, but I've never been a lead. And you've been a lead pastor longer than I. And I said, so you've experienced the growing pains. Like many of you have endured my mistakes of learning what it means to be a lead pastor. And I said, but you're going to be better for it. Because one day when you sit in this seat, you're going to lead in a much better way because of my mistakes. And so for me, while I did not like, and there are circumstances that I worked for bosses that were incredibly unfair, I wish would have been different, I learned from those. So, I mean,
it's good.
Yeah, we learn from pain often.
We do. It's one of the, unfortunately, best ways to learn, but it's the worst way to learn.
And then just get invite really smart people into your life, like you and Mel and others who just are smarter than you and can help.
I think that's putting yourself around people who help cultivate the right perspective, characteristics, and like things that you admire in others. Try to find yourself around those people, because you will just, it's not just taught, it's caught, you know, that idea. Along those lines, how can a church cultivate an environment, a culture where truth and kindness can go hand in hand, where it's not one or the other? Because I think by and large, we usually, churches kind of end up in one extreme. They're super harsh, heavy on the truth, or they're so passive, so kind that, you know, nothing ever actually improves or moves forward. It's just, but everyone has this fake sense of happiness because we're not speaking the truth to each other.
Yeah. I believe it has to be modeled by the leader.
Yeah.
And in our context, by the lead pastor. If I am not able to receive criticism, if my team, and I don't mean just like my executive pastor or those in the C-suite, but if other staff feel as though they can't raise questions, concerns, criticism, have accessibility to say, hey, why are we doing that? Like if it's a culture of my way or the highway, I don't care how many books you read or how many gurus you bring in. I think it starts with the heart of the leader. And I'm not saying I always get that right, but I think it begins there. You just have to model it. We're not there yet here at ACAC. And I think my staff would echo that. I think we've taken great steps the last couple years doing things like retreats, you know, just a little conversation, like I mentioned with that one of our staff that helped a long way between her and I. I do think getting the right people in the right seat, like our executive leadership, modeling that same kind of leadership, doing things relationally where you can build trust.
Do you think it's an ongoing thing though? Like you'll never fully arrive. Like you constantly have to be cultivating it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Last question I've got here, and we'll wrap up, almost hitting the 30-minute mark here. For someone who is leading a team of volunteers, what's one thing they can do to cultivate an environment, a culture in their team where truth and kindness both can coexist?
Yeah. I believe one of the greatest mistakes we make in church leadership when it comes to volunteers is treating them like volunteers. And what I mean by that is we're often so passive. Like, one, and my staff knows I hate that word volunteer. Like, yeah. I think people, Bible talks about serving, not volunteering. And there's a distinct difference between a heart that wants to serve and a heart that wants to volunteer. You know, my kids were in elementary school. I volunteered because I had to, because it was required as a parent who had a child in whatever activity. I hope people who serve here on the weekends have a serving heart because they understand using their gifts for the body of Christ. And so that's kind of one, but because of that, you know, I echo this with our staff all of the time. Like, our staff is paid, to live out Ephesians 4:11-12, to equip the saints for the work of ministry. We're not paying them to do the ministry. We're paying them to equip and develop others to do the ministry. And so part of that, I would go as far as to say, treating volunteers the same as you would staff. Now, I certainly understand they're not paid. We don't have those expectations where you're punching in and all of that. But what I mean by that is, one, it begins with empowering them. Like, trust those who are serving. Like, trust your student ministry worker, trust your volunteer teams, if you will, like, that they're going to make good decisions. They love the church. They understand the vision, and empower them to do that. Equip them to do it. Invest in them. Create cultures of excitement. Give them information about the vision of the church. And when you do those kind of things, then you can have harder conversations. I'm not afraid to say to a volunteer, hey, you missed a mark on this. Yeah. Oftentimes we think, well, I can't say that to them because they're volunteering or they're not serving and they're not going to come back. My experience has been, if you set that bar pretty high and hold that accountability pretty high, most people rise up to that and they feel like they're valued and they're a part of something pretty great. And so I think it's just an attitude thing, and
really good.
Just really empowering and equipping them.
It runs contrary to what you would initially think. Like you said, keep the bar low. We want people to continue to serve. We don't want to lose anyone. But the opposite actually happens when you set the bar high. People rise to that, and they find value and worth in what they're doing because you set the bar high.
Can I give you a quick funny story about that?
Yeah.
We can end with this. So I was a worship pastor, as you know, for a bunch of years. And so, like, early on in ministry, I was at a church in Houston, Texas. And I had a lady, hopefully she doesn't watch this.
She won't.
She
somehow moved to Irwin.
she played saxophone, and bless her heart, she was not gifted to play saxophone. And so no one had ever had a conversation, hard conversation with her about her not being gifted to play saxophone. I was young worship pastor. And so without my knowledge, some of the other band got together with our AV guy, and they recorded a rehearsal, and they highlighted her playing saxophone, and they gave me the cassette tape. That tells you how old it was.
Yeah.
So I listened to this, and I mean, it was like, and it was a subtle way, like Pastor Allen, you got to address this. And so I had a hard conversation with her, and I said, hey, God has gifted you and he's equipped you, but he hasn't done that to play saxophone. And so I'm not going to have you play on the worship team. I wish I could tell you she responded, well, you know, you're right. I've really been praying about it. It didn't go well, but she didn't play again. But here's my point. The amount of trust I earned with the team, because everybody knew how hard of a decision. Now, and I'm like in my late 20s. And so most of the worship team is older than I am at that point. But because I had a hard conversation and I was willing to engage in that, it brought the enthusiasm, the commitment of the rest of that team up so many levels. And I gained so much more trust and confidence. And then so oftentimes, like, while it was really hard, what it does for the team as a whole is so much better in the long run.
Because in that conversation, you actually strengthen the rest of your team.
Right.
And,
yeah.
you know, ships rise with the lowest.
Right.
And you lifted the water level of your team, which is huge.
Yeah. By the way, I have a congregant I'm sending your way. She plays saxophone. I think she would be great at.
we'll let them talk to Josh Rudder, and he can
edit that out.
Well, thank you, Alan. Thanks so much for taking the time. I so appreciate you, and you are an amazing example to all of us. And I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Calvary Leadership Podcast. We hope today's conversation has encouraged and equipped you to lead well right where you are. If you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe and share it with your team or another fellow leader. Keep leading with purpose, and we'll see you next time on the Calvary Leadership Podcast.